Welcome to Hot D, the officially unofficial podcast for House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 1, Episode 8, The Lord of the Tides. Aaron, I assume you've seen this at least once more. How does it strike you now?
I think it's clearly my favorite episode of the season. Like, everything kind of led up to this. Like, this is the answer to the trade-offs of the time jumps versus telling, 20-ish years of history of the show. Just you get to this point and, Viserys is ascending the throne and Daemon putting the crown on his head and his, just looking around at his family, right, and his last night on Earth in all likelihood. This all builds up to this. And I just think that, like, yes, there have been weaknesses when it comes to time jumps and character replacements and actors stepping in and out of roles. But the overall strength of this episode, I think, rebukes or proves that those risks were worth taking, because I don't see how you get to here. As someone that's read House of the Dragon, and that was my main concern the entire time, is like, how can they, the sizzle's all here. The big battle scenes, the betrayals, the conspiring, the sex, the tawdriness, it's all there in Fire and Blood. But, like, it's just like, why do you care about any of this stuff? And I cared so much. And I found that, like, even as I watched it multiple times, like, the same parts, like, Daemon putting the crown, or, Daemon helping his brother to the top of the Iron Throne, putting the crown on his head, still hits. I notice other things, like, the way they frame the shot is it's Viserys kind of going towards Rhaenyra, because she's standing in front of the throne, and then he's, like, kind of fixed on her with his vision. Just how much he loves his family at the end, and how it's so close. I felt like they filmed it as so close to healing this rift single-handedly through sheer force of will and love. I thought it's great. It seems like it really delighted everybody. It seems like it's very satisfying for Daemon to take Vaemond's head and leave his tongue. It's very satisfying to see, Daemon and Aemon kind of squaring off and thinking, oh, this is going to be really interesting sometime in the future. Yeah. They haven't even gotten to the quote unquote good stuff that I would have suspected them to get to in the narrative of the Dance of the Dragons, and they're crushing it. Yeah, I love it. What about you?
Yeah, no, my opinion has not changed much since the first watch on Sunday night. I think this is a great episode. I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but it's definitely way up there. They've all been so good, though. I think there are very few missteps so far in the show. I've been super impressed, and this is, I like how it's both paying off a lot of stuff in the past and setting up more stuff for the future. Like you said, that Daemon Aemon stare off there in the Great Hall or wherever they are is definitely something I'm looking forward to in the future. I want to see what happens, with Corlys. Does he make it back? Is he pleased with all the decisions that have been made in his absence? Is he angry that maybe the king's brother killed his brother? There's a lot of nuance in that. Because he kind of gets what he wants, but also he gets a dead brother. So yeah. That's all super interesting. But those small moments. What I mean is the less flashy moments, right? The moments with the king looking around his family and thinking, if it could only be like this, this is how I wanted everyone to be, is really just kind of heartbreaking in context, because he's getting that final moment. He's going to die by the end of this episode, and everything is probably going to fall to shit, is my assumption.
I thought it's a good looking episode too, from the opening, like, Indiana Jones shots of Daemon going there and getting a fresh clutch of Syrax eggs, to just the big sweeping shots of King's Landing and Dragonstone, to the intimate, dimly lit light of the dinners, to the thunder and lightning of Rhaenyra asking her father to protect her. just, you know, and the, oh man, also Paddy Constantine,
right?
He single-handedly, I think, made Viserys my favorite character, which I would not have called at the start of the season. I thought that this guy, and he's kind of been portrayed as kind of ineffectual and kind of being able to sway this way or that, and there's no real true steel there, you know, the Iron Throne rejects him.
But well, like everybody else has been so shitty at times.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but he's just done such a great job, and his performance of this king who's essentially a corpse animated just by the will to protect and love his family, I thought was amazing. Just the way he portrays, like, just himself lying in bed writhing in pain. The way it, you see, like, you know, what it costs him to kind of get out of bed, you know, let alone put all that gear on him and walk that torturous, you know, how many times have we seen people make that long walk? But like, boy, you felt every freaking step. I got my hats off. If this is his final scene, he did a great job. And I think that the FX artist, the makeup people, the effects art, because they clearly did some green screening. I don't think they really pulled Paddy's eyeball out and melon balled his face like that. But
I haven't seen him give an interview lately.
That's fucking acting, man. That's a method shit right there. You actually get your go through an amputation and a de-eyeballing, which I hear is rough stuff. I thought he just did such an amazing job. And it really shows that how King Viserys had the stuff, you know, when it mattered.
And Paddy Constantine has the stuff. I'm so used to seeing him in like secondary roles and
comedic ones.
And definitely comedic ones. Yeah. This was a breakout for him, I think. And he's been around forever. It's not like, he's some new actor on the scene and he's getting his chance after like two movies. No, he's done a ton of stuff. And I'm super happy to see him getting some time in the limelight because, A, I didn't know he was capable of this. But now that I do, I think he deserves it because, yeah, damn, it was so good.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's just, again, my expectations were for him to keep the throne warm for a couple episodes and then to croak and then to get to the good stuff. And he has just single-handedly become I think he's the Sean Bean of this season. He's the kind of heroic figure who's trying to do the right thing and trying to step through a minefield of his disastrous choices and a pretty decent guy. And he's going to just like Ned lost his head in the final moments, episode 9. It looks like Big King V shuffling off the mortal coil here. I don't want to be too coy because like the official podcast essentially credits him as a on-screen death. So like. I was trying to decide how coy I want to be about like, oh, maybe he'll linger. But like, it seems like even the official pod's like, nah, he rattled his last breath. And I think that 99% of people watching the episode would get that impression, too. So I don't feel too bad about.
In the instant take, people were saying the subtitles said breathing stops. Absolutely not on my copy, on my streaming copy from HBO Max. I rewound 4 or 5 times to make sure that I hit all the spots where breathing stops could be. They definitely don't say it. So they're leaving it to for you to interpret. But the correct interpretation, I think, is he's dead.
And there's been some, you know, perhaps fake out deaths with this collapse at the end of episodes before. But
he's going to come back as a dire wolf. Is that what's going to happen?
Going to be reincarnated. No, I think he'd come back as a dragon, if anything.
Yeah. I just remember all the talk of Jon Snow and his quote-unquote death. Yeah.
Right. He's going to be frigid and a direwolf. I thought the only potential sour note in the episode, because, you know, we talked about how pretty it is. I thought Jawadi did an amazing job of underpinning all the emotion, too. Like that. Walk works because of Paddy Constantine, the FX director, that just nails that shuffle and that cane and Ramin Djawadi just underpinning everything with an amazing soundtrack. The one sour note is I don't know how I feel about Alicent's reverting. What's going to be seen as reversion to the mean being over a misunderstanding of a prophecy that she heard her husband say. I think they've been laying the tracks for this for several episodes of him just generally getting things confused and people, you know, being aware or unaware of that. I feel like all the pieces were there just for Otto to come in and be like, yeah, I get it. He's dead. We're all sad. And his last dying wish is for us to be nice. But it's here. It's coming for you. They're like, you know, they're going to come for your children unless you do X, 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 dot, dot, dot. And giving her this kind of like, I don't know, what is this? A Targaryen prophecy that does she even believe in? I watched last and maybe I because I when I watched it this the second or third times, I scrutinized a scene. And I'm like, no, they're definitely playing it as if she thinks that they're talking about Prince Aegon here. Because she just knows enough about the context to be dangerous. But I guess when I first watched it, I was very convinced that she knew that he was talking to Rhaenyra and she was just getting new information. But I think she thinks the king is like, forget everything I just said publicly and loudly and at great personal cost. Here in my cups of the milk of the poppy, I'm going to tell you the true, which is our son is the real king and the prince that has promised he's going to save everything. It's like, that seems dumb. Like if she referred to genuinely believe that, if she wants to like take that as like a pretext, but I don't know. I thought that they didn't need that. What do you think?
Yeah. It's not how I read it. I guess I don't know. I paid closer attention the second time, to what she was saying. I think, yeah, she does mention Prince Aegon, but I think by the end of that, she has understood that he's talking to Rhaenyra. He thinks she is Rhaenyra, and that the reason he made her heir is because of this prophecy. Now, what she does with that information, I think, is going to be, you know, left to next week, and we can see, I don't know, if that influenced her negatively or positively. But yeah, I didn't read it as like, oh, now she has some mandate from like both sets of gods or something to put Aegon on the throne.
It feels like that's what the majority of people are taking away from the scene. And I didn't want to, but I feel like that's what is intended. Cause I was also hoping that like, maybe she's just disgusted at like, oh really? The reason that you're doing all this stuff is because one of your stupid dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking.
You know, especially like in her religious context, I don't think she would take that stuff very seriously, but I don't think that's what they're intending.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they were intending the Aegon thing either, though.
Really? Okay, well, we can talk more about that when we get to that scene.
Yeah, we should.
I was just like, I thought maybe you'd just like agree. But yeah, we'll have to disagree about it. All right.
Okay.
There's still lots of hot D to talk about. We'll be back right after the break.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
And now back to Hot D.
Yeah, let's get into the recap so we can get there.
Yes.
All right, we start off with Corlys being injured in an ambush. Actually, it's just, you know, Vaemond who's saying that, or the Maester who's saying that. He's in bad shape. He might not live. Vaemond wants to name one of Laenor's children the heir to Driftmark before Corlys dies and passes it to Lucerys. Rhaenys disagrees because that wasn't what Corlys wanted. Or at least we think that's why she disagrees in that moment. Find out that's not really true afterward. Neck infections, not good, man.
Yeah, neck infections, half drowning, and now you got a fever. Mm-hmm. I noticed that these ravens with these ill tidings came from Evenfall.
Yeah, where is that?
Evenfall is the seat of House Tarth, which you might recognize as the origin of Brienne. She's Brienne of Tarth. It's a small island off the east coast of Westeros. So you got Blackwater Bay. That's where the Blackwater River disgorges into the Narrow Sea. And it's this big bay, and it's got Driftmark and Dragonstone in it. The next bay up, the coast of east of Westeros on the east coast there, is Shipbreaker Bay. That is the home of Storm's End. And Tarth is essentially the Dragonstone of Shipbreaker Bay. It's okay. Like almost an exact same position, exact same. It's a little larger. It's just off the coast. So this is probably less than a day's sail away, which is why they're anticipating all this to happen in the coming day. But also, I think the Corlys was expected, the ship that was supposed to, it was expected back on Driftmark the day after this episode takes place.
Yeah, she said something like 3 days.
Yeah, so like I think
before he gets back.
Yeah, like the next morning, the ship are hosting either Lord Corlys or his corpse will be pulling into Driftmark, and it'll be interesting to see what they make of that. But yeah, I don't know. I thought this was interesting how close to the vest they had Rhaenys kind of like playing her cards here.
Yeah, and especially after all we've heard her talk about, you know, I don't want to be on the throne, I've given that dream up, all that stuff, and now here she is literally sitting on the throne at Driftmark, or I guess High Tide, ruling in the stead of Corlys. And later in the episode we're going to find out she's actually fighting to kind of hold that power permanently. So once she got a taste of it, she was all back in on like, yeah, I might want to rule.
See, my take on it is not that she had a taste for power, but it's like she's very cognizant of getting fucked at this point. It's one thing to lose out on an Iron Throne, but you've got, you know, your lord husband in a cushy, wealthy seat of Westeros. But like, if Vaemond takes over, who knows what happens to her? I mean, she's related to the king and all that stuff, so it's just probably, you know, he can't like ship her off to the Silent Sisters or have her executed or whatnot. But like, she could lose you know, broadly speaking, everything. Like, he could treat her as the dowager lady of the house and put her in the nicest place in a castle and give her high honors and all that stuff. Or he could not. You know, he could kick her out and, you know, take away her inheritance and squander all their money. Like, I think she's it's more of like, I just want to make sure that I'm in a position where I control my own fate and the fates of my grandchildren. I don't want to be left locked out with no power and no standing.
Okay.
And also, I guess, like, if she's because I interpreted it as like, you're here to speak for yourself, as she wanted to, Bela says here, she wants to continue being the lady of the house until the you know, whatever. Yeah, I think she was there to kind of speak for that position, and not out of any kind of pride or anything, just to kind of like make sure she doesn't get screwed. But I could be wrong. Okay.
Gotcha. And then they do a little bit of foreshadowing here in this scene where Rhaenys tells Vaemond that his words could be taken for treason. Yeah, especially later, especially when he gets out a few more words. We'll see that.
It's funny because Game of Thrones has managed to like completely invert the power dynamic of who you, I think, the show intends you to root for. Because, like, you know, we had in the old show these people who were kind of law and order, the Starks, and wanted to do things that were right. And they were investigating the secret cuckoo clan of incest babies and bastards who were going to, you know, inherit wrongfully the throne. And we broadly see that, saw them as right. And here's the exact opposite, where we're being asked to sympathize for people who are flouting these customs. Now, of course, it was with consent. You know, like, Laenor is not like Bobby Baratheon, where he's like getting, you know, cucked behind his back. And, you know, Bob would be horrified by all that stuff. And Laenor didn't give a shit either way. But still, it's kind of funny that we are at the people who are just like Laenor, like Vaemon says this episode, I'm just speaking the truth, man. This isn't treason. It's just what's happening in front of our eyes. And we're like, boo, hiss. Yeah, Daemon, cut his head off. Like, it's kind of wild. I understand why the Greens get really pissed sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely haven't inverted that. I feel like it's earned for these characters at this point. I think, like,
yeah,
boy, I had a harder time liking the Lannisters than I do liking the Targaryens on the throne here.
Yeah, Viserys is not Tywin.
Right. I mean, you know, in a lot of ways, right? He's not as cunning. He's not as smart. He's not as fiery.
But he doesn't have to be. He's on the throne, right?
Right. You know, and during peacetime. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's had
with no obvious threat, right? When we started this off, there's no obvious threat to the realm.
Yes.
And then, you know, he kind of fumbles backwards into a threat. But
yeah.
All right. Daemon climbs into a dragon roost and pulls out 3 eggs. And then he gets a message from Bela. I was surprised to see how spry Daemon still is. I don't know how old he's supposed to be here. I know how old Matt Smith looks, but
I think he's supposed to be in his early to mid 40s at this stage.
Yeah, that's fucking spry, man.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't do
free
that.
Free climbing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's wild.
No gear.
Boy, it's good that they put this scene in here, because if I'm looking at the standoff between Aemon and Daemon later in this episode, I'm going, well, Daemon is 25 years older than this kid. He's going to get his ass kicked because this kid can fight. But when they show him, you know, climbing rock faces and things like that, I'm like, all right, he's still got some moves for sure.
Yeah, I feel like that Daemon is Viserys's portrait of Dorian Gray. Like, the older and more decrepit he gets, the stronger. Because I think that's what this scene and the Vaemond scene was supposed to convince us of, is that Daemon is still a very dangerous person.
Yes,
that is fit and is not lost any of his physicality and his prowess in battle. And while it's true that Aemon seems like he's pretty flash with a sword and has been training, even his instructor says, you're ready for the tournament. Daemon's still one of the few people that's actually tested in war.
Yeah.
So you've got experience and still obviously skill against, impetuousness and, again, obvious skill. It'd be interesting to see if and when these guys square off. I got to say, as a mild interesting aside, it would be hilarious if this is subverted and they both don't actually square off.
Man, there's some things you just got to give the audience, like a Clegane Bowl.
They don't have to do shit.
You just got to
give
shit. It to them.
Oh, actually, why am I encouraging this? Yeah, yes, audience, invest in everything. There's never going to be another Oberyn moment where you really want something to happen and it's subverted in the worst kick in the balls, squeezing of the ovaries way possible. No. Yeah, that's never going to happen on the show again.
Well, the thing is, I don't know what the subversion is here, right? Because, like, yeah, I think I want to see Daemon kick Aemon's ass, but there's so much ground before... Like, I keep switching sides, right? Like, that's the thing, is the show has done a good job of saying, like, is this a team you want to root for? You know, Each side has their own flaws and their own evils that they're doing, but I don't know who I'm really rooting for here yet. Because I remember Daemon's actions earlier in the season. Like, right. I have not forgotten what a shit he is.
Right.
And now I'm seeing that Daemon is a shit.
Yeah.
He is very cool. And now he's like seemingly joining up with the side that I am biased toward, the Viserys Rhaenyra side. Yeah. But
and I think,
I don't
broadly
know.
Speaking, the show treats them as, I think the show is treating Team Black as the protagonist, broadly speaking.
I think so.
That might change, and there might be, you know, just in the same way that we really hated the Lannisters and really loved the Starks, we all really like Tyrion. You know, Tyrion was all right in our book. I think that there might be some places where we can carve out exceptions for people that seem to be, you know, really cool or really honorable or whatever from our chosen. But I think that's another thing that's driving the rivalry in the fandom, which is a very real thing. It continues to brew and rage, and I love it. I love it. This show knows how to generate fucking heat, man, when it comes to villains and rooting interests. But, like, I think that's one of the reasons that's particularly driving the frustrations of the Greens is that the show feels like they're not on their side. And I think that's actual fact. I think the show is, broadly speaking, on Team Black side. And, that's got to suck.
Yeah, can we all just agree that Otto is the true villain of this story?
I would give Otto the chief villain at this point.
Okay, cool. So three eggs come out of this, he gets a clutch of three eggs. I don't know what to call this, a dragon egg sack, I guess.
Yeah. The books referred to them as a clutch. It's always called, there's a clutch of dragon eggs. And I guess this is what a clutch looks like.
Oh, that's a word for the actual, object. Okay. I thought that was like you would call a bunch of fish, a school of fish or something, like a clutch of dragon eggs. Multiple eggs.
Isn't that when any kind of reptile lays eggs, it's called a clutch. Like, okay. I think birds are a nest regardless of whether they're, you know, in the tree or not. But the lizards and whatnot lay clutches of eggs. I think that's how it works.
So, I mean, is three a significant number in dragon egg terms?
Well, so like I mentioned this on a lore portion of the Maester's Corner, that there's this kind of like quasi mystery. It's very low impact, but it is a mystery of where did Dany's eggs come from? Where did her three eggs come from? These fossilized eggs. And there's lots of different. I think the leading candidate is Dreamfire, which I think we've seen in the show, but just once. And they haven't established like who's the dragon rider of it yet and all that stuff. The leading contender is there because they noticed they conspicuously laid a clutch of three, then went missing, and then the model of what we think Dreamfire looks like looks a lot like Drogon and his brothers. But I wonder if the show's got something different in mind, because, you know, when I think of a clutch of three eggs, and it seems like that this is notable, like Daemon's like, three eggs, can you fucking believe it? Not one or two, but three. He does channel some Gary Oldman Fifth Element energy. I think that they're kind of underlying that. So it might be the show's kind of fun way of throwing their hat in a ring for Dany's egg speculation. Or maybe they're keeping it super, super mysterious for George to clarify later on.
Yeah, could be. And these are Syrax's eggs as well.
Yes, so which is Rhaenyra's dragon.
Dragon.
I do wonder why they harvest them, because it seems like in the clutch, they're kept naturally warm. There's some kind of like steam that's released and he's like, take these and put them in the warming chambers. Maybe it's just like that's a better system, a more sure system. But
yeah, could be. Think there's any predators that eat dragon eggs?
I would think more with the dragons themselves, that... maybe. Like, you know, another dragon goes and raids a clutch and eats it. But, like, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, probably not. All right, Jace is learning High Valyrian and going overboard with the study regimen. Daemon shows Rhaenyra the note from Baela, which says that Vaemond is contesting Lucerys as the heir to Driftmark. And Rhaenys is joining Vaemond when it will be decided, but it's not looking good. Daemon and Rhaenyra decide to go to King's Landing to try and head off Vaemond's play.
Yeah. Yep. I like that they show, like, very efficiently that Daemon and Rhaenyra are, like, very simpatico. Like, he's, you know, she immediately grasped the meaning of this. Mm-hmm. They're completely aligned in what they should do and what they need to do. Yeah, it's cool. And I like Jace taking, like, they're really showing a contrast between Aegon, who has the name of the Conqueror, versus Jacerys, which, who is extremely studious and taking this seriously. Like, he is trying to defuse the situation instead of piling on later on. You know, he's trying to learn High Valyrian because he thinks that's what kings do. Like, he's taking this shit seriously in a way that even not Rhaenyra took, like, this seriously when she was his age. So mm-hmm. I think it's another way the show's kind of putting their thumb on the black scale, because you want Aegon? You want this Aegon on the throne? You want the High King rapist to be on the Iron Throne? I don't. I sure don't. But, right. Yeah.
And there's a little bit of, you know, brains versus brawn thing happening too with Aemon and Jace. I feel like that could be important later on. If we, you know, go ahead another 10, 20 years, whatever, in this story, and Jace keeps up his studies, how does he use that to combat Aemon's physical prowess and what, bloodlust? I don't know what he's got. He's crazy.
Between reading the books and watching the show, I feel like the Aemon is the closest thing we've got to, like, the true steel, you know, that would
true
make a fine.
Steel.
He's got everything. He's got, you know, he's thoughtful. He's skilled with the blade. He's ambitious. It's just that he got his head full of gobbledygook by his, and his order of birth is all whack. And he got a bunch of gobbledygook poured into his head by his mother. But, like, of all the people out here that could be, like, I feel like Aemon is one of the better ones, but I don't know.
I've not
also
seen
turned
any
into a bit,
like,
of a bully.
Yeah, I've not seen any actual, like, intelligence from him yet. All I've seen is intimidation and, you know, the physical and the bullying, like you said.
Yeah, I guess I was interpreting his gambit with Vhagar as intelligence, but that's maybe more cunning.
Yeah, I was just interpreting it as a kid who didn't realize how significant his actions were there. He just wanted a fucking dragon, right? Like, everybody's making fun of me for not having a dragon. There's a dragon up for grabs. I'm going to go grab it. Not because I think this is, like, some play for 20 years down the line when I'm going to have the biggest dragon and be a threat to the throne or whatever. It was just like, I don't have a dragon. I want one. Go get it. But there could be more.
I don't know if it's, like, cunning or nerve or what, but, like, you compare, like, Jace learning to master his dragon, who is, like, you know, the size of, what, a Great Dane or something, and he's clearly intimidated and he's hesitating with his Valyrian commands, versus Aemon, who confidently goes up there. And if he had given a Jace performance, roasted.
Totally.
Roasted and eaten. And they're not, it'll be like, Jesus Christ, did he just walk off into the, what happened to him? He's gone. So, like, I don't know. It says something about him, but maybe I'm just trying to throw a bone to the greens here. Because I don't hate Aemon. I feel like Aemon feels like Ender from Ender's Game to me.
Jeez, you know? I don't know how you can look at Aemon to not hate him, but all right. He's just got one of those faces, man.
He does have an unfortunate, off-putting face. I will say that, yeah.
You know, it was kind of weird to me that
Crispin Glover weirdo face.
Yeah, it's strange that he looks like he does and Jace looks like he does, given what they looked like when they were 5 years younger or whatever. I would have thought that they would be exactly the opposite. The Jace would have grown up to look like Aemond looks, and vice versa.
Interesting. I was actually surprised at how relatively good-looking Aegon turned out. You know, he goes from Mike from Stranger Things to, like, you know,
that's what I mean. Yeah,
Chad, King Chad, first of his name, right?
Yeah,
dumpster fire human being, but he's good-looking.
No offense to Finn, but yeah, it's. I expected Mike Targaryen to grow up looking like Aemon looks, but except with an extra eye. Yeah.
I forget. I don't think we established a time jump. Like, I think that the first scene there establishes a 6-year, which I know has a lot of people's heads spinning. And Rhaenyra has punched out another two kids, and she's got another one on the way. But yeah, this is. Let me ask you this: do you foresee other time jumps?
Big ones? Yeah. You know what? I think I was thinking about this last night. And I think we've got like a bunch of players in their places now, but I think there's another generation of players who are just a little too young to really matter much. Mm. So I think we do have to jump forward significantly at some point. And maybe it'll happen, you know, all at once, and we'll just do like one big 10-year time jump, or maybe it'll happen gradually with a few time jumps or over the course of two more seasons. But yeah, I think it can't just be a battle between Aemon and Daemon. Fuck these names. They have to like grow these kids up, especially Jace. I think Jace is too young to really like have an effect on the story still.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious because I think about the Ralph Bashke Lord of the Rings adaptations and people being confused over Sauron and Saruman and.
Oh, that's play compared
Ralph Bashke
to this.
Changes it to Saruman, to Aroman, but like this is like literally like we got two fuckers looking named Aegon, and they're on the exact opposite sides of the battlefield.
Yeah.
Deal with it. Yeah, we got a Rhaenys and Rhaena and Rhaenyra. Yeah, we got a Daemon and a Vaemond and an Aemond, and it's crazy. But it's like I can see that's one of the that's one of the first things that Condal and Sapochnik like came to grips with. It's like, are we actually going to do this? Are we going to start changing names? They're like, we're just going to have to keep the names. And
it doesn't help that the family tree is so complex, too. Like in Lord of the Rings, Saruman and Sauron is easy to distinguish between because they're on
different
sides.
One's a burning eye and one's an old man in all white. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Super visually distinct, but also they're not related in any real way. But like this, like everybody's related. You've got people who look, and this is the other thing, they look exactly like you would think the other side of this equation would look in a lot of cases. Yeah. And it's just so confusing. It is so confusing.
Yeah, you're like, okay, Rhaenyra's kids all look like brown-haired strong boys. I got it. And now the new next generation of her and Daemon's kids are literally the epitome of Targaryens. Yeah,
and they look just like, you know, Aemon and Aegon, so... Yeah, two Aegons, both with blonde hair, different sides. It's fucking confusing. But we'll muddle through.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. All right, let's go over to Rhaenyra arriving at King's Landing. She's greeted by essentially no one, just as Otto instructed. The castle looks a lot different in her eyes. Lots of Faith of the Seven imagery.
Yeah, completely been de-Targaryenized.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is significant that Lord Caswell, you know, he's the one lord to offer timid support to her. Congratulations to her when she was doing her, walk of blood through the Red Keep to present her baby to the queen as commanded. That he's the only one and kind of like mortified that this is a huge breach of etiquette.
He's just a brown noser. That guy just knows that, look, I've seen Viserys. He's on his way out, and I'm going to suck up to the heir here.
You got to wonder, but, like, why is he the only one? Like, I think that you're supposed to take from this that, like, yeah, Otto, but even still, like, I think you're supposed to understand that, like, the vote against women on the Iron Throne in the Great Council of, like, 101, and that's, like, 20 years ago, was 20-1 in favor of the man versus the woman. I think you're supposed to understand that, like, Otto could do what he wanted, but there's enough lords and ladies at court that if they thought that was wrong, that they could, you know, come out and see. But like Rhaenyra really has no friends. I think they're showing that she has like no friends at court.
Makes a lot of sense. There's still lots of hot D left to talk about. We'll be right back after the break.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. And now, back to Hot D. And also, this is kind of a callback, you know, where Corlys did this to Viserys, right, when he was proposing a marriage alliance.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like they did that just to show what a breach of it. Yeah, just, you know, that everyone should know better.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a huge snub. All right, we go over to the small council meeting where everyone except for Beesbury seems to be willing to ignore Lucerys' claim as heir to Driftmark. But there will be an official petition the next day. Alicent leaves to greet Rhaenyra, but she gets sidetracked by news that there has been an incident with Aegon.
So I think there's a misdirection here. When she's talking about meeting her guest, she's talking about Vaemond. And when Otto says, I trust that they've been greeted as befits their station, and like the Lord Commander kind of looks uneasy and says yes, I think it's because they have gone all out to greet. And you see that Vaemond comes in with this fanfare and this honor guard and all this other stuff. I think this just goes to further show you that this is a deliberate snub that the Lord Commander is kind of like uneasy with. Like, it's just on the threshold of treason to like treat the heir of the throne this badly. Yeah.
It's a 0.5 on the treason scale.
Yeah, but he's the hand, so he speaks with the authority of the king. And as we've seen this episode, the king can always like get out of bed and put his king pants on and belay all this shit. So like, that's what I got. When I first watched it, I thought that they were talking about Rhaenyra. But the timing of everything, it seems more that they... I think everyone's kind of surprised, too, maybe, that Daemon and Rhaenyra are here. Because it's not like they were sent ravens and be like, hey, just want you to know that your lineage is going to be questioned and and the bequeathing of Driftmark is going to be questioned and all that stuff. It's like, nah, this is some secret shit.
No, my idea is like, okay, so Baela sent them the message because Baela didn't... you know, want this stuff to happen.
Because she's leal. She's leal for her father.
And they said, okay, well, we're going to go to King's Landing. I don't think they necessarily told anyone they were going to show up. And so I don't know if Otto has like lookouts realizing, hey, they're inbound on their ship or whatever, but or has spies over there to tell him stuff. But yeah, he finds out. He says, nobody go out to greet them. And then when he says, like, were they greeted in the manner befitting their stature, in that small council meeting, Allison's like, oh, what? They're here? And then she says, I got to go greet them. Because she does go visit Rhaenyra and Daemon in the King's Chambers.
Like, right.
Immediately, as far as I can tell, after dealing with the Aegon situation. So, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, Vaemond's going to get his introduction regardless. Yeah, yeah. But
I don't know. I think that's a valid way to interpret it too. But mm-hmm. I think you could look at it both ways, and both are kind of interesting. True. The other thing I think you're supposed to notice here is that Rhaenyra doesn't have very many friends on a small council. In fact,
yeah.
It seems only one person, Lord Beesbury, is bothered at all the fact that they're trying to strip this kid of his rights, mm-hmm. and also seems hilariously ignorant because he's like, oh, what possible pretext could you strip Lucerys and the Tylan's like, yes, what, or what was it? Or was it Jasper Wilde, the new master of laws? Like, yeah, what pretext mm-hmm. indeed? Like, they can't believe that this guy is fucking blind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and they just have to wait until the king dies to actually say it, right?
Seems like it, yeah.
Otherwise, it's treason. Yeah, and I mean, you're supposed to take away from this, obviously, that Alicent is sitting on the throne in Viserys' absence, because we'll see later he's off in terrible shape drinking milk of the poppy.
Actually leading the sessions. I think that's slight breach of etiquette that it should be the hand there. And the queen
really?
Could be sitting. Huh. Yeah, I think so. Because I don't think the queen rules shit. I really think it's the hand is the one who speaks with the king's authority when the king's indisposed.
Huh. Do they not have anything like that at Driftmark or I guess Hightide? Because Rhaenys sits on that throne in the absence of Corlys.
Yeah, I think it'd be like it should be the eldest son because, you know, you saw like or whoever the eldest son that sits because like even Bran sat the Winterfell
that's a problem.
At one point. Right.
The eldest son
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure because every great house has a maester. I wonder if like if you would appoint the maester as like a kind of regent because the maesters are supposed to be completely leal to their lords. They're not supposed to, you know, advance their own interest or whatnot. It's supposed to, you know, they're supposed to be an impartial advisor to give their lord the best guidance that they possibly can from their training at the Citadel. So they'd be kind of be ideal. But like, I don't know. I can't remember anything in my head from the lore that would say that a maester ever. So like I think that's her sitting that Driftmark throne is unusual, but also we have Lady Jane from the Eyrie who's doing that even now. Like she is, you know, ruling in her Lord Husband's stead.
Yeah.
You know.
And then this is also the scene where we apparently have two Erics. We have an Arik and an Eric. And they are identical twins. Both, what are the odds that both of these guys would make it into the Kingsguard? Identical twin brothers with almost the same name make it into the Kingsguard?
So you know the genetics are there for them to be a good warrior.
Sure.
So I guess it's like ambition. Like, you know, you don't need, that's a good, that is kind of a good question. Like, yeah.
There's only like seven Kingsguard, 12 of them? I don't know how many there are, but not
so like
many.
One of the twins,
the
twins is the top seven swordsmen in the kingdom. What is the, what is the odds that they'd be 6 and 7 instead of like 6 and 14 or something?
Right.
Good question.
Or the one got like a little too wrapped up with girls or something and didn't study or train as hard.
Yeah.
And the other became 7 and then, sorry.
I wonder if it's something that like all else being equal, they shouldn't. But like the king's kind of like, come on, twin Kings Guards. That's kind of cool.
How cool would that be? I promise they'll never be in the same room.
But seriously, just think of the practical jokes, Alicent. Come on. Come on, let me have this one. I let you have Cole and he murdered that guy. I want to have identical twin Kingsguards. I want hijinks. I want to film a movie called The Kingsguard Trap.
I'm sure that's what Viserys was thinking over these last 5 years as his body was rotting away from underneath him.
Well,
think of the pranks.
Obviously has been neglecting his model. He needs a new hobby. He needs a new
hobby. Fair. All right, let's go to Rhaenyra and Daemon visiting Viserys in his bed. He is in terrible shape. Daemon tells him about the petition regarding the Driftmark heir and asks him to reaffirm his position on Lucerys. He seems pretty out of it. I'm not even sure he understands what Daemon's saying. Then he's introduced to his newest children, Aegon and Viserys, and the king's head hurts, so they give him his tea.
His everything hurts. I mentioned that, like, he must stink so bad with all these bed sores and, like, literal rotting. And, like, people, a lot of people point out in the instant talk that, like, there is just massive amounts of incense burning in his room at all time to try to cover that smell. So
I mean, look at his teeth, man. I can understand why he's in pain. Like, my God. I've had a wisdom tooth crack in half one time. And I couldn't get to the dentist for a few days because it was a weekend, and I was in extreme pain for multiple days.
Dental pain's some of the worst.
And I didn't look like Lucerys, I don't think. Or, sorry, like Viserys, I don't think. But I did feel like him. I was just sitting on my couch moaning. I wish I had milk of the poppy.
I tell you what, that's one of the things that you read a lot of people's journals from, like, the olden days. Even you're talking, I'm talking about, like, 200 years ago and on, and, like, a crazy amount of their entries is just the near constant pain from their teeth that they're having because they didn't have toothbrushes and fluoride and dental floss.
Yeah.
And effective dentistry. So, yeah, like, it must have been just everything. And then they like, I thought Patty did a really good job of just showing just, like, how much constant pain he's in all the time. And he's just, like, swimming through this milk of poppy. They talk about Lord Corlys perhaps dying. And then two sentences later, he's like, you know, they catch him up on the stepstones. And it's like, Lord Corlys. And he's like, wait, well, something happened to Lord Corlys. He's clearly kind of in and out. I don't think from a mental decline, but from the drugs he's on and just from the pain he's under. But the one constant is, like, he is delighted to meet his grandchildren. Like, he kind of perks up and smiles for, like, you know, 10 seconds. Really, you could tell it really charmed him that she named one of her sons after him. He's like, oh, there's a name befitting a king. And but then, you know, the pain comes back and it's the kids start crying and it's and he's very apologetic. I don't know. I can't not like this guy.
Oh, no, he's awesome in these scenes.
And then he's supposed to... what's your reading on the cup, the lealness of the tea that they're making the king? Because I looking at Damon.
Yeah, him sniffing that cup and really just huffing it deep.
I don't think
sure
Damon
it
does that.
It
if it's just milk of the poppy, because he's got to know what that smells like, and he would not be shocked that the king in this condition would probably be being on that. Or maybe he is. Maybe that's the thing. He's like, you guys are keeping him on this to dull him and make sure he doesn't know what's going on.
I think that's it. Yeah, I think Damon sniffs this. He goes, "That's milk of the poppy." But if he's on this all the time, then he's useless as a king. On second watch, did not see any signs of poisoning here.
Yeah, because I think that's like they're hurling accusations at Allison's, and if he thought that there was actual poison in that cup, like the widow's tears or something, I think he'd be like, "You're fucking poisoning my brother, yo!" Like he's not shy about speaking his mind.
No,
he's a little bit more
people.
He's a little bit more diplomatic after 8 episodes, but not that diplomatic.
Right. Nope. I think it's just milk of the poppy, but it's the fact that he's on it all the time and probably a lot of it. All right, let's move over to Queen Alicent dealing with Diana, who has apparently been raped by Aegon. She asks her who she's told. Diana promises not to say anything else. And then Alicent gives her some gold and some tea to drink, which I do not think is just moon tea. This is the cup that's laced, in my opinion.
Dude, we're on an island because I listened to I was curious about this.
What?
I listened to several of our competition and colleagues, and they certainly consider the idea, but they dismiss it because, like, oh, well, why would you give her gold? Why would you make sure she? But like
to lull her into a false sense of security so she'll drink the thing and be poisoned to death.
Well, also, if you pay attention to the dialogue, When the girl says, "Please, please, please, I promise I won't tell anyone else," she says, "I know you won't." Mm-hmm. She gives her the cup and says, "It's best to be certain." That has to connect to the line of, "I know you won't."
Yeah.
And then you have to, like, the fact that she's gone missing in the castle and is noted in this episode. I was actually surprised that I seemed that we're in a minority opinion here. But I think
that's wild.
That Alicent's deliberately murdering this girl to make sure that she can't say anything about Aegon in public.
Yeah. I mean, it's been five years with...
And of course she would get... Because, like, what? You know, like, of course she's going to give her gold and make her think it's moon tea, so she drinks it and there's no muss, no fuss.
Exactly,
like, I don't think Alicent is particularly cruel. She's... But I don't know. Like, I feel more... And I don't think the show will ever confirm or deny it. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But like, I feel pretty confident that, yes, you're supposed to, that it's at least a defensible position to think that Allison has poisoned this girl and we'll never see her again.
Yeah. I think 5 years of Laris's influence could make you do some things that are less.
Yeah, like in for a penny, in for a pound, kind of, right?
Yeah.
I
could be wrong.
And this is just a terrible position for her to be in, because like the thing that's so great in Olivia Cooke does all this so well is that Allison gets it. Like, this is essentially her. You know, she could have been in this position. Mm-hmm. And Allison's doing and saying all the things that you would want to be told if you were in a position of that the poor Diana here. But then she does she starts the fucking, you know, bullshit where she's like, well, sure, I believe you, child, hugs her. But think about everybody else. Oh, mm-hmm. you're the only one here in the prince. And, you know, a lot of people are going to hear that and think that, you know, maybe you were complicit, maybe even let him on. And we don't want that to happen, right? Because we know what happened to girls who, you know, talk that kind of talk. Like, it's really fucking sick.
Oh, yeah.
I think she kills the girl. So, like, Allison is a real study in religious fervor and hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. And she kind of wraps herself around it like a cloak, like, you know, when she's going to be later talking to Rhaenyra and Daemon, and she's like, oh, you know, of course I'll be speaking for the interest of me and my father, but you can be sure that the faith of the seven guides me. I don't know where the mother's mercy is in this room. I don't know where the maiden is looking after his poor servant girl. You know, I can't see nothing but the stranger. So,
yeah. Yeah, and then we kind of have like a two-part scene here where then Allison goes to Aegon. She's furious. She slaps him, says he's no son of hers. And then, like we mentioned, Helena asks if they've seen Diana because she has not been around.
So we kind of like went back and forth about how often we thought, like, it was just the first time that this had happened. Has this been something that's become somewhat of a habit? Because I got more data on subsequent watches. Have you come to the same conclusion, different conclusion? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking it might be a pattern. I mean, she says, yeah. How can you keep carrying on like this, especially on a day like today? And
how can you keep carrying on like this?
And I don't think that's what you say. Other incidents of him jacking it out the window or something, but
do you see, like, so let's say like the progression is jacking it out the window, pinching a servant's girl's butt, rape. Do you say mm-hmm. that last one is like carrying on like this, or is that like a brand new fucking low for someone to get to? Because I feel like it's the latter, and the way she says keep carrying on like this, I think that this isn't the first handmaid that has to. And also, as I was looking over Taylor's face, who's the servant girl who later reports to the Masseria, mm-hmm. she's giving a lot of like this but I could see a head servant girl in her position just making these faces, because this is just a terrible situation from every angle. But I felt like there's a little bit of more like, oh, you dead girl type of spice to it too.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, in the instant take when she calls for the tea and the gold, it's just kind of right there. As if this is something that has happened before, and this is kind of a go-to move.
Here's the gold, here's the tea.
Yeah. And maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But yeah, I was definitely getting like, this is a pattern with him.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems to be taking still that hard line, you know, with him, like trying to just, I don't know, anger and berate him into flying on the straight and narrow here, but it's not working.
Time-tested and failed, mostly failed pattern of mothers and sons that just try to nag them into being
shame and guilt
people.
Will only get you so far. And then,
sure. And then they learn like, oh, this is it. A slap and some shame. I can keep you. I can deal with a lot of that.
Right.
I think it's so interesting the inversion they're doing here, where like Rhaenyra has actual bastard children that are, everyone would say these are monstrous, but they're actually good kids. And mm-hmm. Allison, and also Rhaenyra, who doesn't really give a shit about morality and what people think about her. Allison, who cares very deeply about her faith and what people think about her, has kids of impeccable birthright, but they're all gone to shit.
Mm-hmm.
And she's disowning them in private.
Yeah.
Versus being disowned in public. I think there's some really interesting, you know, light and dark contrast going on here.
Yeah, and especially when she says, you know, I only care about what other people think. And then you see Jace saying, you know, it doesn't matter what other people think. There's definitely contrast they're drawing between the two sides here.
He reminds me a lot when he said that of Rhaenyra when his because she said, oh, who gives a shit what people think, you know?
Yeah.
And Daemon is there to like laugh up his sleeve and no one is there to laugh at Jace's ignorance, arrogance and naivete.
Yeah, which I would say is why Allison Otto, Team Green, whatever you want, feels like aside from this like insanely miraculous setback for them is broadly winning so far.
Yes. Yeah.
Like this episode with Viserys getting out of bed, like you can't foresee that happening. It's a crazy Hail Mary that works, but like it just kind of staves off disaster for Team Black, right?
Yeah. No, and I mean, I don't think Green is a great strategist. I think that they, like, you know, we mentioned there's a 20-1 advantage in Team Man should sit the throne. Right, versus right. Woman should inherit the throne, just inbuilt. Like the Greens have that massive home field advantage. So mm-hmm. the Blacks have to play perfectly and the Greens have to make a couple mistakes. And I think they make a big one, but like, is it enough to erode that like Lords and Ladies 20-1 advantage in opinion? I don't know.
It's not even a mistake on their part, right? Like this would have gone down exactly how they wanted it to had
yes.
Viserys not, had Rhaenyra not showed up and talked Viserys into helping her out.
Yeah, and I don't even know they thought that was possible, down. Like literally right, possible right. that he does gets out and does this.
No, how could they? I mean, look at the man.
Right, right.
So yeah, not a mistake, but wow, what a save from Team Black. All right, Allison welcomes Rhaenyra and Daemon back to King's Landing, and they question what's been going on with Viserys and the petition to determine the Driftmark heir after it's already been decided. And yeah, there's a lot of animosity here still, even though I think Allison is trying to bury a lot of that. I'm torn on Allison in this episode, right? Because she's killing servant girls who have just been raped by her son.
Allegedly killing, not allegedly raping. Yeah.
Yeah. Allegedly killing. I'm going with killing.
Okay.
Sorry. She gets judged for that. Until next episode where if Diana just shows back up, then we'll talk.
I'm fine. I'm fine, actually.
Right. But then she does seem like she genuinely wants to patch things up. And she doesn't, it doesn't feel like she thinks it was right to snub them when they got here. I feel like she's caught in the middle and she's not totally on board with discarding Luke as the heir.
Yes.
Because you can like, see in those council meetings, she's the stopper, right?
When it comes to actually doing the deed, she's getting cold feet because she does believe at some level. I think a couple things happen. I think she is genuinely pious and devout mm-hmm. when it comes to the faith of the Seven, and it's got to bother her the way Aegon is behaving. Sure. And she's becoming clear to her that he's not outgrowing this.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, she is right and that these are bastards, but like, is it any better to put Aegon in the throne? She's got to be having some severe doubt about that. And just like how underhanded this is. This is not right. any the way the faith of the Seven, which is trust in the gods. They can fight their own battles. You know, they don't need people here like putting their thumbs on a scale of justice here and there. Like how foolish and crazy that would be from a person of the faith's perspective. And yet this is what Alicent is doing. I think mm-hmm. she's genuinely bothered. And I love the way she plays it here with Rhaenyra and Daemon. Like she plays it perfect. She doesn't say like if there was recording, she could be heaping scorn and saying bastard this, bastard that. But she knows she's got the power. She's in mm-hmm. the driver's seat. All she can do is say things that would hurt her and help them. So she just says 100% if there's a recording device in this room, not a lord or lady would find anything that she said wrong. But she also is clearly signaling that, yes, we are self-interested and we are not leal and we are going to fuck you over and there's nothing you can do about it. And it's got to be infuriating. Daemon and Rhaenyra would rather her be saying bastard this, whore that. But mm-hmm. she's not giving him anything. Yeah. Daemon's trying. They're both kind of trying to needle her. And she's playing it perfect.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Daemon wants to probably chop most of her head off, too, if he could.
Sure.
Right? He's just thinking, say it. Say it.
And I also think that she's like, I don't think it's 100% that they're keeping the king on the poppy because they want him addled and out of the picture. When she says you should see him without the, I think because we did see him without his medicine, he's just racked in pain and crying constantly. Like,
and then died.
I don't.
So,
yeah. And it's not like they were trying to keep the king, you know, before this latest condition. It's like, you know, he was still doing his duties and showing up to the small council and whatnot. So, like, I don't think that Otto and Alicent are this devious. They are taking advantage of every situation, but
yes,
this has been one of the things like, yeah, I don't believe they're actively poisoning the king.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Same maybe here. I don't think that's what the show is trying to tell.
I agree. They're telling the story of a man who is in extreme pain, needs the milk of the poppy just to survive, and they're obliging him maybe a little too eagerly because it gets him out of the way and puts them into the seat of power. But I don't think they're actually force feeding it to him. You know, like it's when Viserys says, yeah, I don't want any milk of the poppy, just arrange the supper. Otto isn't like, oh, but my liege, shouldn't you be taking milk of the poppy? What think of the children? Think of he doesn't try and force it on him. He's just like, okay.
He's that's the thing. Is like, I feel like he's kind of the Allison that he's always trying to find that line. Like, you know, when they were going around talking about like, hey, should I marry Lena? Like, even Otto at the top of his, you know, being unleal, couldn't bring himself to just out and out give the king bad advice. He's like, you know, that proposal has merit. Sure. He couldn't, you know, I think that they both are much more comfortable working in the gray area than directly transgressing law and king's will and things like that. I don't know if that'll always be.
Let's not forget he's already been caught and called and fired for that once. So he's probably on his toes with that stuff, walking as best he can, making it look like he's walking the straight and narrow here. Because
Leech is always looking for his next meal.
I would assume any sign of disloyalty, Viserys would just be like, all right, you're out again, buddy. I can find another hand.
But we'll
see. He still has the sex tapestries too. That's important. We got to keep track of those tapestries. The tapestries made it to King's Landing.
And that's the one thing is like, you put up this Faith of Seven shit, but in my room, and I want my model and I want my jerkatorium intact, unspoiled. Okay.
As long as I have a hand.
Unattainted, Alicent. Yeah. There's still lots of hot D to talk about. We'll be back right after the break.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk Podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
and get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
And now, back to Hot D.
All right, Jace and Luke get a lot of stares when they reminisce in the combat training yard. They watch Aemon defeat Kristen Cole, and then Vaemond arrives. They have obviously not been here in a long time. Everybody's looking at them like they are completely out of place here, right? Not just, oh, here come the bastards again to train. It's like they haven't trained in ages, and I wonder if they decided to stop training because of everything that went down with the other kids, or was it ordered by Rhaenyra after what happened with Harwin?
I think Rhaenyra just fucked off the Dragonstone, and that's kind of like the lords and ladies know about it, and they're like, oh my god, look, they're back. What could they possibly be back for? You know, like, yeah.
Of course, they haven't been here, so how could they train here? Yeah.
We got treated to the brothers Cargill, the identical twins sparring in the background. And I wondered if they had
I just know that Eric's. It was
Eric and Arik Cargill. And I wondered if that was one guy playing, like, because I thought in the background it might have looked like they CGI'd mirrored them or something. But no, these are played by real life twins, which of course they would be. Why would you ever do that unless you're trying to Ewan McGregor Fargo season 3 something,
right?
For some kind of Emmy stunt. But like, it's funny that like I kind of took that as an effect, but it's actually real life. I thought that was interesting. And also, like, they are setting up, I think, a very real paper, rock, scissors thing where it's like, we know that Cole can beat Daemon, and now the Aemon can beat Cole. Does that mean that Aemon can beat Daemon? Of course, that was also 20 years ago. Things have changed. But I think
that was
like
an official tournament. Yeah.
That like this guy, you know, that these guys are old rivals, and, you know, it's a Cobra Kai situation where you've got these guys, you know, there's an intermediary to resolve their beef. Who's the Master Miyagi in this?
It had to be Kristen Cole, right?
I mean, he's the big sweep in the leg guy, though. So like, I feel it's probably sacrilege. They're both Cobra Kai.
Okay.
Yeah, there is no Miyagi. Miyagi got beheaded 21 years ago, and he could have put a stop to all this, but he was keeping it too leal, and he pissed the wrong people off.
Maybe the Lord Commander of the King's Guard is the Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah.
What's his name? I can't remember.
Oh, Lord Commander Harold Westerling.
Harold Westerling, okay. I'll forget that next episode again.
That's why you got me here.
Nice. All right, let's go over to Otto and Vaemond trying to convince Alicent to name, I guess, Vaemond heir to Driftmark instead of Luke or Bela. Who is he trying to get them to name heir to Driftmark? It's him, right? Because later in the actual petition, he said that's why I should be. Yeah.
He wants to go. But I guess in his mind, because I guess he doesn't truck with the female succession,
right? And so it goes back.
So
up Daemon, the line to him.
Daemon is not good. So he wants to essentially have the claims of the strong boys set aside so that he can. It would go back up and is the second son. He would inherit. I guess the third son.
Sure. It makes a certain amount of sense knowing, you know, what we know about the nature of Rhaenyra's children, I guess, but. Then the king has changed that game, right? Because he appointed Rhaenyra as the heir to the Iron Throne. So there's a lot more wiggle room for the women of Westeros to get some power here. So why wouldn't it go to Rhaena or Bela?
And honestly, reading between the lines in the books, that's what I think is, it's not so much that the lords are sexist, which is they are. They absolutely are. That's a big component of it. But it's also like how of all the hundreds of minor houses, how many daughters, first in line daughters that might be, you know, like the thing about Arya Stark types. That's like, you know, I could fucking do this better than my dumbass younger brother. And how many of them are like just kind of suffering in silence because it's just not possible. But then you got Lady Jane, you got Rhaenyra being the queen. Like this would be a sea change that like would change a lot of different successions. And like, I think that makes them very nervous to like just upend how you do things at this state. So again, I'm not saying it's not
for sure
a huge patriarchy move. Obviously it is, but I also think it's more of like, oh my God, any of these could be a dam breaking moment where it's like, well, if Rhaenyra takes it and this other person takes it and this, and like, so where does it end, you know?
And everybody, you know, is offering their loyalties, right? Vaemond's saying, you know, the substantial power of Driftmark would be forever grateful to you, would owe you a debt if Alicent chooses to name him heir.
It's got to make her feel dirty, right? That's like the wrong thing to be like, and if you do this thing that makes you morally uncomfortable, I'll richly reward you. Yeah,
right.
Like you can see on Alicent's face this doesn't make it better. Doesn't make it better, Vaemond.
Definitely not. All right, Rhaenyra tries to sway.
I will say this before we move on. This is all happening because Lord Corlys didn't set anything to Pin, apparently. You know, even though he clearly wanted Luke to take all this and he didn't care, like the fucker would not put pen to paper even when he's going off to war. Get a will. If you got kids, any kind of inheritance, get a will. Talk to a lawyer. Get on the internet. Get a form. Something. Jesus. Yeah. Don't make your kids squabble and fight over this shit. Just get it all
right.
Get it all down. Be leal to your estate, people.
Yeah. All right, Rhaenyra tries to sway Rhaenys to her side in the petition hearing rather than advocating for herself to be the new Driftmark heir. Rhaenys is still very angry because she thinks Rhaenyra had Laenor killed. Rhaenyra tries to reaffirm here that she had nothing to do with his death. Very particular choice of words there. But she says, Rhaenys says she has to stand alone and turns down her offer. And it was a damn good offer, right? Offers to essentially make her children's children kings and queens.
Yeah, you will. Your younger granddaughter will retain her rights to Driftmark with my younger son, and they'll rule, and you'll keep it in the family.
The
oldest one will be queen of the realm. Yeah, like that's pretty fucking good offer. But Rhaenys sees that it is an offer is generous, but it's also desperate. And like she says, it doesn't matter because and this is you're supposed to understand that, like, even if I was on your side, Otto's going to nod sagely and Alicent is going to shake her head ruefully, but they're going to come up with some pretext to strip us all. Like, it's
complete
like this
farce.
So like, it's like, I think that Rhaenyra thinks that this is like, you know, she's playing the chessboard here. And, you know, she thinks she's getting a queen and she's like, that's a queen that never was. I'm still a pawn. I'm still an unpromoted pawn. I thought this is just a great scene. And then, like, you know, that they're going to hit you with your first blow and they're going to force you to your knees. And I got to think about what I'm going to do.
So if she thinks this is all a farce, which it definitely is, why is she even trying to put herself up for this? Because
I think she thinks there is a chance that because she can make the same offer that Vaemond does. Like, look, I'm a dragon rider, too, also, don't forget. And I command the Legions of Driftmark, which is the largest navy. Vaemond, you know, kind of I feel like Vaemond's always wrong. Like, it's not like I know the guy in detail, but, like, you know, he was the one that was kind of, like, pissing on Daemond,
bordering on Corlys during the Stepstones battle.
And kind of wanting to shit his pants and cut and run and all this stuff. So it's like, I don't think that he's so it's like, I think that there is a world in which, because, like, what does it matter to Otto and Alicent, right? Like, as long as Luke doesn't inherit, which would tend to strengthen Rhaenyra's, because, like, that shows that the realm is, like, recognizing that this is all legit and we're not gonna pretend like these kids are bastards. I think it helps out there.
The only thing it could do is, like we were talking about, establish maybe a pattern of women being ruling.
So
kingdoms.
That's where it's like, and I think that's a stronger. So I think that she probably doesn't see it as much hope, because you're right. That would be affirming a woman's right to inherit.
Yeah. But in my mind, this is part of why I think she's you know, enjoying the power that she has while sitting on this throne is because she's trying to put herself there permanently. Like, if she didn't care, I think she'd be, you know, fighting for,
I'm only saying that like, it's not that I think she enjoys the power. It's just, she doesn't want to be fucked with. She just wants to be left alone.
Okay.
And if she has a seat by her own right, then the only one that can fuck with her is the king.
Right.
You know,
that makes sense. I love the dynamics here, right? Because like, Rhaenyra is trying to get Rhaenys to not hate her for having her son killed, because she didn't have her son killed. But she can't say that she didn't have her son killed, because then she's been hiding the fact that her son has been alive from her for like 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. And she would totally lose her support here, right? I mean, that's another huge betrayal. Yeah, it's not on the order of like, I killed your son, but it's still a massive betrayal.
No, and that's the thing. It's like, Rhaenyra doesn't have any kind of wiggle room, because the fact that she has to sit and think about 10 seconds, like, okay, how can I refute these allegations without accidentally lying or telling the truth, but also like, and she can't. And like, that's the, like, you know, Rhaenys sees it. Like, you're full of, even if you're say like, you're some flavor of full of shit. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know. I don't think she suspects the truth, but she sees that Rhaenyra is not being fully honest with her. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. All right. Then Rhaenyra goes to visit Viserys that night and asks him to defend her. And he can barely respond. He thinks it's Allison, which is important later when he mistakes Allison for Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
This is a good scene. I like her, you know, petitioning her father as the only person who can step in and make things right to do it. And seeing the state that Viserys is in and knowing how unlikely that is and how painful it would be for him to even try.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then not knowing if he even understands what she's saying, right? He's so out of it.
That's the thing. This reminded me so much of... I guess this is such, no, nobody's going to get this, but there's a scene in the Final Expanse trilogy where there's a daughter making a plea to her father who's kind of incapacitated. And you understand that like, this is, there's no fucking way this is going to happen. And then he ends up, coming through in like the most glorious way possible. And like, I got the exact same chills with this scene. But yeah, you're supposed to like, this is just her pissing in the wind and kind of ruining her fate that, like, you know, you said I was supposed to unite the realm, but you divided it by making me the heir. And now as in my most crucial battle, I'm completely undefended and you can't even rise from your bed. But he fucking can. And that's going to be the awesome part.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible.
And also, I think I want to talk about Emma here for a bit. I think that they did. In this sequence of scenes, the tint that Rhaenyra has with Rhaenys and her meeting with her father here, and then the next scene where she starts to defend and she's like very scornful with Alicent, you know, like, you know, leaving it all in the field. I think she's doing such a great job of channeling Millie's performance. And there's such a great continuity of character in their facial expression, the way they phrase things. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people this isn't working for, but it's 100% working for me.
Yeah, especially those dinner scenes. That dinner scene in this episode, I think back to that small council meeting from an episode or two ago. I think it was two. Where she makes the same offer, right, that she makes Rhaenys in this episode. Like, we'll marry our kids, and then two generations from now, our house will just be one. Mm-hmm. That thing. The way she gets up and toasts at supper to kind of try to heal this rift gave me flashbacks to those scenes, because they're very similar, right? She's been trying to heal this rift for years now. It's just fucking Otto has been in the background poisoning Allison against her.
Yeah. And like I said, I think Rhaenyra was a little obtuse and treating her friend, you know, like all she could see is her friend's fucking her dad, which is fair. That's a hard thing to overlook when you're a teenager.
Yeah.
But like,
and then
you
lying
know, not
to them about
Yeah, like what they say to each other at the dinner scene is a long time coming. Like, you know, we don't want to admit it, but we are in a lot similar positions and have a lot more in common than we often say. I thought that,
And they've had those realizations before. I think of that scene where Daemon returns and she goes and sits with Allison as Viserys and him chat and drink in the courtyard. But like, they've realized that they're very similar to each other, but they haven't like outright acknowledged it. And then in this scene they do, and I like that a lot. So Viserys is getting treatment from the Maesters for his horrible, horrible sickness. And he tells Otto that he wants to have supper with his family that night. And he also turns down Milk of the Poppy. I'm just thinking, man, you are not going to make it to supper. Look at you. Can you even move?
Dude, then when they stand him up, like just the amount of effort and pain is involved in that. And you can tell that Otto is starting to worry because, like, you know, he's patronizing him to begin with. And he's like, yeah, I want supper. He's like, oh, my liege, it's but breakfast time. And he's like, no fuckwit. I want I want you to prepare dinner tonight for my family. Yeah. I'm getting
Will
out of bed.
Will there ever be another supper? What supper could I possibly be talking about, you dipshit? Yeah.
Right. And Otto's kind of like, huh, this is concerning. But he doesn't think, he still has no idea what's to come. But you can kind of see that he senses for the first time, maybe the trap's going to spring the other way. Like I said, I think Otto's a complete shit, but Reese, what's this guy's name?
Ivan's? I don't know how to say his name.
He's doing such a great job of showing the wheel spin in this guy's head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think he's a very good actor playing just a shit of a character.
Yeah. Yeah. Real Rasputin.
And it's a good character. I don't want to say like it's a bad character. It's a well-written character. It's just, man, you don't like the guy.
The show generates heat, man. Like nobody, like they really, and you know that the whole blacks and greens of it is just on a whole other fucking level. It's like rooting for your local fan sports franchise plus wrestling combined.
Speaking of, making things look bad, boy, Viserys, when he was in his bed, you know, with his bandaged face and in his kingly pajamas. I was like, man, he looks kind of shriveled up, a little bit emaciated. But boy, when you take his clothes off and you get to see his full body, it is surely, you know, I don't think this is what Paddy Considine looks like without clothes.
No, and that's when
I think that's true. But they must have done some kind of crazy visual effects on this.
Yeah, his hands are crazy and like how bony they are. And I would feel like that they were. Sorry, hand. but also like I thought that they were fully CG, but like when Rhaenyra takes it into her own hand, I don't know, maybe they're swapping an old guy in the close up shots, but like it's they're doing is seamless and it just
right. That's telling the impressive thing.
Telling the story seamlessly of this guy just being a wreck of a human being, and it's just miraculous that he's getting out of bed.
Yeah, and they do it so great in this scene that it just stands out to me a little bit in the supper scene when it's obviously CG. And it doesn't, like I said, in the Institute quite match up with the performance or what I would expect the performance of a man without a cheek and most of his right side jaw to be. But like, boy, in this scene, they nail it. I couldn't even tell you if you had said, hey, no, he just like lost 50 pounds and we shot this a year later.
Yeah, like, he pulled a Christian Bale machinist kind of thing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Because it looks good here. All right. The succession of Driftmark petition begins. Vaemond makes the case that he should be the Lord of Driftmark because he has pure Valyrian blood. Rhaenyra begins to respond, but Viserys enters the channel and struggles his way up to the throne with Daemon's help. The petitions continue with Rhaenys deciding to back Rhaenyra instead of advocating for herself. And Vaemond commits treason by calling Rhaenyra a whore and her sons bastards. So Daemon cuts off most of his head. Holy shit, man. This scene
is great. Like, there's been a lot of doomed last stands in Game of Thrones history. And they filmed this just like those, with the same kind of musical cue, the same kind of like Viserys as he's walking to the throne gives me really big Yoda
I was about
vibes.
To say that. Yes.
Like, I can just see, like, Frank Oz with his hand up Patty's ass with the, because it's the cane. It's the cane, the little stick,
the way,
like,
he's,
you know,
using it. How it's almost taller than he is. And yeah.
Yeah. Never on your mind on where you are, what you're doing. You know, he's going to just lecture everybody here. But like,
the 900 year old line works just as well. Cause when I'm 900, I won't look like
you're actually only 39, Viserys. This has just been, you know, but you look like you're 1,000 years old. No, I thought that there was like a lot of like that Yoda kind of this, the hunchback and like just barely like keeping the momentum going. Mm-hmm. And just how dramatic it was where like the princess, just as she was about to mouth her defense, just the doors kick open.
The Kingsguard announces defense, him. Right? Like it's about to fall flat on its face because it's pointless. In this room, but and then the doors bust open.
Yeah. It's this isn't like Jon Snow standing against the charge of the Boltons. This is this is Stannis coming to save the day, to save him, right? This is the cavalry coming in, and the way, again, they frame it to where from Viserys' point of view, he's going towards Rhaenyra to support Rhaenyra and climbing this stuff. Just everything. Just the way that they took their time. It takes them like 2 minutes to go from the doors to on the throne. I guess that the crown falling off his head is something they improvised because it like happened. They're like, you know, we really like this kind of inversion of Matt Smith offering his crown, the Driftmark crown or whatever the hell it was, the Stepstone crown.
Yeah.
The Crab Eater crown. It just works so well. And like everything, the back and forth of Daemon and Viserys to where like, I think Daemon is genuinely blown away and impressed by his brother for maybe the first time in his fucking life. Because he sees like, this is costing this man a lot. And this is like, this is valiant what he's doing.
Yeah, it's as valiant as taking your dragon and leading a charge into the mouth of a cave where you'll almost certainly be killed. You know, it's
right.
It's crab feeder. It's on that level, even though it's not as action packed.
Yeah.
That line, I will sit the throne today. Like that's in this context, that's such a badass line.
Yeah, it is because it and Otto, that's the thing, is like Otto and Allison and Daemon look at each other and it's like everything that they've carefully architected is going to be undone by this fucking mummy. And they can't believe it. They can't believe it.
And they can't stop it either. That's the thing that I love
in this
moment.
There's nothing they can do.
Daemon looks over to Otto. He's like, is this really happening? And are we going to let this shit happen? And Otto's just like, yep.
And this is like the ultimate, because like, you know, I'm often fighting with the people in feedback where they're like, well, chapter and verse of Westerosi law says that. And I'm often like, you fools, that doesn't matter. It matters how many. But in this room, in this moment.
Yeah.
Otto can't call banners.
No.
He can't tell the Kingsguard to, you know, surround, to get, like, because nothing that he's got in this room, in this place, can stop what's going to happen because the king has 100% authority to do whatever the fuck he wants. And all the people that matter in the room are not going to go against that. And it's the rare moment where, the laws and everything are actually going to be observed. And you can't Littlefinger or Varys your way out of it.
Yep.
And I just love it. I love how he's just like very proud. And he's like, nope, it would work just as well if the Kingsguard carried him to the throne on a litter.
Yeah.
But it's important to him. This is him being tested and that he wants to be seen as a king. And the only one that he will accept is his brother's help. Because now his brother respects him. Just I fucking lost it every single time I watched this. I got really, really moved and choked up.
Yeah.
And then like the king's like, he's got a little bit of like fire to him too. He's cantankerous. He's like, I must admit my confusion that. And then when everything's matters, like I guess the matter is settled again. Like it's
right.
You don't expect this wheezing guy to be able to be capable of that kind of fire.
And then when Vaemond, you know, goes on his tirade and Viserys stands up and says, I'll have your tongue for that.
Yeah.
If Daemon doesn't do what he does, I fully expect Viserys to walk down those steps and at least point that knife at Vayne, right?
Like, he'll have the Kingsguard force him to his knees and his mouth open, but yeah, he'll cut it off himself. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. So, yeah,
he's such a badass. There's a production still where it's a slightly zoomed out where you see Patty like in front of Thorne. He's got his knife out and he's like, you know, he's got this gold mask on. Which one of our really insightful instant talkers mentioned that that's a pretty close homage to the other Viserys we know, where
Khal Drogo
pours out the molten gold, like it flows up, and like Patty's crown and that mask cover almost exactly the same area that the Viserys, you know, Dany's brother, does. It's like, I think that's a pretty slick, like they must have felt really fucking clever that day when they came up with that shit, you know?
Yeah.
And good on them because they deserved it.
Totally. The other thing that really strikes me, a couple of things, but one of them is if Viserys doesn't do this, the Civil War is over. I mean,
I think so. Team I don't Black think Rhaenyra has anything.
Just straight up lost.
I don't know. I mean, they do have a lot of dragons. I'm not saying that like they wouldn't fight because they do have a lot of dragons. They do have some. They would certainly lose.
I mean, the Valyrians are an extremely powerful house, and we've seen that from the beginning of this show. Important and vital.
And they have
a
lot of the dragons too. You know,
and they have a lot of dragons. Yeah. So I think it's not just like how like the fashion he does it in here, but the stakes, right? Because the stakes are everything for his daughter.
Which is sad because, like, you know, from a, it must be infuriating
and
from a green
everything
perspective.
For the entire realm in the future, right? Like, he's, you can't forget the prophecy that's ringing in his head.
Sure.
Because that's part of this, too.
Yeah. And I guess that's a, if I'm a green, it must be infuriating because you can make a good argument that if the king stays in bed, it's better for the realm. It's 100% better for the realm. Yeah. Potentially, I don't know, because, like, King
right
Aegon
now,
is
yeah.
a... You know, he doesn't seem like he's going to be a very good king, but like it would probably avoid a civil war, a bloody civil war, if the king stays in bed and Rhaenyra and Daemon just accept like, well, it's inevitable. We took our best shot and it's just not going to happen.
But where does that lead? You know, I mean, we've seen where it leads and I mean, this happens how it happened. But like, let's say Aegon does take the throne. What happens to the prophecy? The Song of Ice and Fire, the prince that was promised, right? Is that...
Well, yeah, I don't know. But I think that's another weak part of the story is like, you know, coming into this after that first episode, I'm like, I really hope they answer the question of like, why the fuck haven't the Targaryens done more to prepare? Mm-hmm. Because they told a story of a king who's had a pretty good run of peace and prosperity continuing from his grandfather's day. And have we spent a moment talking about the wall? Have we spent a moment about reforming the Night's Watch? Have we spent any time about like, we've got to stockpile Valyrian steel? Like, it seems that, and maybe that's the Targaryen. They just believe that like, as long as we're on the throne, the realms united, that's all we need to do. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little disappointed. I do feel like the Targaryens, from my perspective, don't seem like they take this shit seriously themselves. It's like they bring it up when convenient, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, seems like it. The other thing of note here is the Kafka-esque nature of this whole scenario with Rhaenyra and her children and the realm, like Rhaenyra responding to Vaemond's comment about his pure Valyrian blood with a comment about how her own children have that same blood is just so obviously false on the face of it, literally on the face of these children. and it's so obviously untrue. But then at the same time, no one can challenge it without it being treason. And so there's this like and the idea that anything, you know, that this farce, that anything Rhaenyra could say here in this moment would change the outcome with Otto presiding over it is just absurd on its face. So like, yes, it's Kafka-esque in its nature of like, this is all absurd. This is all absurd.
And also, like, it must have felt so good for to be Vaemond to finally say, and like, that guy really put his chest into it. Like,
oh,
you know,
he's great.
These children are, ba bastards! And she is a whole, like, I'm finally saying what everyone save Lord Beesbury is saying. Even the goddamn children see it. Like, it must feel so good to literally speak that truth to power. It's just, it's the last thing he felt. So good on him for feeling some pleasure. Because also Daemon with the Snicker Snack. Holy shit, that was awesome. And it's so unexpected too. Like, I was expecting like a tongue to be taken, or like a heads, or like, you know, some kind of like fetch me a block type of situation. But for it to just happen right there, like Matt Smith explodes into action and his this guy's head and his the tongue's flopping and he's got the he's perfectly composed, and then Otto tries to disarm him, but he's like, oh no, no need, and backs off, and the Kingsguard doesn't want any of that. It was just fucking badass, man.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was so genuinely shocking and delightful. I don't know why, because again, like, Daemon's not a good guy. Vaemon's not particularly a bad guy. He just is on the wrong side of the power here.
All right, let's move on to Vaemon's body being prepared for its return to Driftmark as Rhaenys watches. This looks awful. This half head that's disconnected from Vaemon's body. Ugh. Seems like at this rate, the waters outside of Driftmark are going to fill up fast. We did all the math on that, but we were not accounting for Daemon just cutting the heads off lords.
Yeah, yeah, we weren't, you know, the lords of Driftmark are really drifting of late. Yeah, we'll, it's, yeah, I wonder if we will have a coffin scene. I guess not.
Probably not. Then we go over to supper, where Viserys hopes to inspire his family to come together. And it seems like it's working on the adults, but the kids are still very much at each other's throats. Viserys's head hurts, so he has to leave. And then the kids go a little too far with Aemon, making a pink dread joke. And he toasts to the strength, or rather, the strongness of Jace. And that starts a fight, which Daemon puts an end to. And Rhaenyra decides to take the children back to Dragonstone and then promises to return.
Yeah, I like the opening where you've got the princess and the queen sitting there with this divide between them, this little divide. And it's almost a shot for shot remake of an illustration from Fire and Blood of like the queen and the princess sitting there despising each other. And Alicent opening with a prayer that needles Daemon for killing Vaemon. And, you know, the king trying to make this a cause of celebration, which is only pissing the green side off, you know, him congratulating and on all this shit. And Aegon is giving the business to Jace. But him, I guess maybe we're going to fight about this. I thought that this effects when he took that mask off were stunning too. I didn't see any kind of like, oh, well, this looks fake. I thought this was like, it worked very well. Like, you know, him, you know, you kind of see that this guy is a bit of a statesman when he's like, you know, my face is no longer handsome. If it ever was, he's got this little kind of joke, but I want you to see me as I am, not as your king, but as your father, your brother, your husband, your grandsire, who may no longer be with you for much longer. And I just begging you, please, for our house, for our crown, and for just the sake of an old man who loves you, can you stop with your shit? And it works. And the story of them telling it works with the music and Viserys kind of looking around and seeing like everything happening and the way this is what he's always wanted. And like he thinks in his mind he's done it. It's incredible. It's an incredible scene.
So I don't have a problem with the way this looks. It's not about it looking right or wrong. It's about it matching the performance. It's like when they have someone, you know, who has legs that they've hired to portray someone who doesn't have legs in film.
Yeah.
It's very, very hard to get that to look right.
Yeah.
Just because the legs are in the fucking way where they shouldn't be.
Yeah, center of gravity is off, even if you're like painting Matt like you did with Forrest Gump. And yeah.
Yeah. So it's more like that. It's like, Could a man with this little flesh on his face speak as clearly as he is? Could he drink wine without just leaking it all over himself? More of a problem with is the mismatch.
For me, I thought Patty did a pretty good job being gurgly with his tongue kind of like being out, like he's got like, you know, really struggling with drool. Like he's constantly mopping that side of his face because like things are escaping. I thought it matched pretty well, and he's still like leaning heavy on the table and the cane and all that. I mean, yeah, the guy's face is half gone. Like, I don't know what a person sounds like that, that does that, but I thought it worked for me anyway. And I thought the toasts,
yes,
that the women made to each other, which works because it's all true. Like, and I think that they secretly know all this, and they had the whole time. Uh-huh. It's probably one of the reasons that they're so pissed, is because they can see the other person's point, and they got this nagging voice like, you know, you're kind of being a shit, and this isn't fair to anybody. And, you know, that's always the worst kind of enemy to have, is like when it's like you got to realize that they're right about a few things.
Just being reluctant to admit that it's a bad situation to be in. But, you know, they are inspired. I mean, Viserys's inspirational speech here works. It's just how long will the effects linger after his
death?
That's
the question I had, is like, even without the king dying this very night, you wonder like if Otto gets a chance to be in the room with Alicent again.
Yeah.
These kids, like, they're not reading
the room.
They've
already poisoned them, right?
But even that's the thing. Even then, it's like there's this moment where like Jace swallows the last bullshit that Aegon throws at him and gives a toast and chuffs him on his shoulder. And even Aegon is like, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. But fucking Luke, and I think it's Luke's fault. He has to play this pink dread game. I think that the pig is even missing the same eye that Aemon is missing.
Oh, is it?
Okay. Yeah, because the way they frame when the pig comes into view, like Aemon is sitting on the exact same, and it's like the pig's face is lined up with him. I think you're supposed to understand that they even took to the point to like scar him in the exact same way. So it's a pretty, and then all, like, it'd be one thing if just Luke, but everyone starts snickering, all of the children who are in on the joke, and that's when, you know, once the grandsire's out of the room, Aemon's like, you know, because he almost stood up when Jace and Aegon started getting pugilistic. But this, like, he finally, he can't fucking believe this shit, and
Aemon's toast here is really good. It's
right out,
you know,
of the
both needling them. Oh, is it? It's needling them for, you know, being bastards, but it's also needling them for being weaker than he is. I mean, that's just a fact. I don't see Jace ever doing anything that I saw Aemon doing with a sword in this.
No,
episode.
He's been practicing his eye Valerian and his courtesies, and Aemon has been to be a brutal fucker, and it's them as adults was so, because he just contemptuously, like, Jace gives him a full on punch, he takes it, and then he just grabs him by his face and shoves him down, which I think is the ultimate.
Just like he did in the
just
dragon
like he
scene
did
from the previous
when
episode,
when they were kids, where Jace is just trying to be like, you know, I actually have fond memories of our shared youth together, and like he's like, no, that stuff is done. And Daemon and Alicent intercede, and there's this really dangerous moment where Daemon like gets in front of him, just kind of like sighs, like, okay, are we going to do this? And Aemon's not ready for that smoke just yet, so he declines.
Daemon may be the only guy he's actually afraid of, or
maybe
not sure he can take, I guess.
But man, there's like that scene where he takes off Vaemon's head, like, initially shocks, like, they get to where Helena's, like, claps her hands over her ears, and, like, Aegon takes a step back, and even, or I'm sorry, Aegon, and then Aemon does too, but then, like, at the end, there's, like, this hungry look, like, that's my Mount Everest, I gotta fucking plant a flag in this guy's ass one of these days, and it's this there too, it's this, boy, it's pretty good.
Which means, you know, Aemon actually respects him a little bit too, which is potentially dangerous for Daemon.
It's also it's a tragic note to point out that, like, you know, Jace asking Helena to dance, like, he's doing this kind of shine on Aegon, but like from Helena's description of Aegon's being married to him, it seems like a real fucking not good situation.
Oh yeah,
and I thought on my second watch is like, Rhaenyra tried to marry Jace to Helena. And look how sweet he's being and how much he's enjoying, you know, this. And it's like, in a better world.
Yeah.
You know,
they would have been great together potentially.
But the thing that makes me think that maybe things would have gone differently is when the king's not there and the girl and the boys and girls have been dismissed, it's just Rhaenyra and Alicent. And they do that thing like it sounds like a genuine reconciliation. Like, I got to take the kids home, but I'll come back and me and the king will enjoy that. Like, I think that, like, they're ready to bury the hatchet for real.
Yeah,
and
I think so.
If Viserys could live for another 6 months to a year, maybe this would have really stuck. Mm-hmm. But alas, it's not to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm super interested in seeing what happens next week. Let's go over to Miseria getting a report from her spy, which I'm pretty sure is the queen's servant.
Tayla. Yep.
Tayla. And we talked a little bit about why they might be showing Miseria in the instant take here. It could potentially have something to do with Viserys. You know, she might mm-hmm. be in there. If in the castle weren't poisoning him, maybe she had people poisoning him. I don't think so, yeah. because all this stuff started before she right. was in the picture there, but who knows?
I think you just have to remember that there is another spy, dirty tricks person besides Larry in King's Landing, and she has dubious alliances because we know she's worked for Otto. We know she's been the lover of Daemon. Where does her allegiance lie when the chips are down? And they're just reminding her us of her at this point.
We never forgot her here. We were always like, and then there's Miseria in the background doing something. What's she up to? She said she wanted power. So I'm happy to see her coming back because I want to see the dynamics here.
I'm very intrigued with what they end up doing with her. And also, I've been pretty dismissive of it because people have been saying this ever since Layla first stepped on the stage. Is like, does anyone else think that she might be Melisandre? And I couldn't help but note that they fixed her hair up almost exactly like Melisandre. I don't know.
So Melisandre was at one point the servant of the queen.
I was at a 1% chance. I'm at like maybe 50%, but I did. I asked Kim what she thought of this, and she didn't think much of it. But she also mentioned that this in real life is Sapochnik's spouse and credited producer on the show. So it might just be kind of like a way to get her onto the show just as a kind of a fun little Easter egg. But also, maybe she's Melisandre. We know Melisandre's super old.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, been playing the game, the song of, been playing the Ice and Fire game for a couple hundred years. Maybe this is the, you know, what she's doing in the middle parts of that story. It's something I'm going to take a lot more seriously now that I see the continuity and the dress and stuff that they're, and the grooming.
Yeah. And then the final scene here, Viserys mistakes Alicent for Rhaenyra and makes a bunch of references to Aegon's prophecy, and then he dies. Again, I think he dies. Pretty certain.
Yeah, I just don't know about Alicent having this conversion because of this prophecy, this misunderstood, misheard prophecy. I feel like all the parts were there for just to, you know, for Otto to... you know, or Rhaenyra to make a misstep or something. Like, I don't think we needed, because I don't know. It's kind of messy. I still don't know how I feel about this, the Song of Ice and Fire stuff. It's potentially interesting, but I know I kind of wrinkled my face when it's like, oh, this is supposed to be, because it's like, it's one thing if she's like, oh my God, my son's being passed over because of some Targaryen mystical bullshit. You know, I believe in the seven. These is a bunch of heathen bullshit. There's no power. It's another for her to legit think that she's part of this prophecy, and
Aegon plays this, that second half.
It seemed like a lot of people did, man, and it got me maybe we're missing something, because I don't like that. I don't like, makes Alicent seem a little simple.
Sure. The thing that this prophecy does is it gives Rhaenyra a reason to want to be queen, more than just like, hey, I want power. It gives her a reason to think that the realm is better off with her.
But that's the same thing to Alicent apparently now too, even though it's the first she's ever heard of it. And like, the king has constantly been getting things wrong. And
right.
a lot of what she says doesn't seem like it affects Aegon at all. Like, did he have a dream? Did he do this? Did he do that? I don't know. I don't know. It's not a fatal flaw if they just like, Allison was going to be totally on Team Rhaenyra, but then she found out her husband super secretly on the night of his death repudiated all of his previous actions and the actions that he took at great personal cost and sacrifice in this episode and mumbled something about a dream. And now she's convinced that it's got to be Aegon on the throne. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's the case, then I'm saying that's just pretext. I don't think that she can really believe that. But I don't know what the show really wants me to believe. I don't know. I feel like it's a little messy. I'm curious to see what other people think.
Yeah. Send them. Take us to the feedback section where we can tell people how they can send in their comments on that.
Yeah, hotd@baldmove.com is how you send in your long form feedback. We'll be considering that later this week, Thursday to be precise. You can also follow us along with us on twitter.com/baldmove. Please don't send your takes there. Or if you do, just. They're probably not going to get read because I only look at the feed at the hotd@baldmove.com to compile feedback. And you can also, if you want to get in, you're like, what's these instant talks that were sound so incredibly awesome and a great way to unwind after the episode with a bunch of House of the Dragon fanatics. Well, you go to support.baldmove.com and you get access to ad-free feeds and a ton of bonus content, including those instant talk sessions that follow our instant takes. And you can watch it all recorded live. So it's like literally, you know, you go grab a snack, grab a beverage, head to your computer, your phone, whatever, get on the live stream and you're talking with us. But hotd@baldmove.com is for feedback. That'll be out Thursday. Then Sunday, we got the new episode, the penultimate episode. And I guess I mentioned that Sean Bean lost his head in the penultimate episode. Like, but this is not the penultimate episode. Next week's going to be the penultimate episode. My God, what's going to happen there? We'll be there to talk about it right after the episode on our instant take and instant talk. So that's what we're going to do this week. I can't wait to see what you guys have to say about this episode. Until we talk on feedback, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.